they do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career.
Welcome, coaches, back to the Talking Split podcast. I'm Rob Calder. That was Nathan Cooper-Brown just ringing the pizza guy to say these had better get here quickly, otherwise I will hunt you down. Welcome, Coops.
Good to see you, gents.
Vesty, welcome to you as well.
Hello, everyone. I've got to get out in front of something.
I thought this might be coming.
Yeah, so I've got to get out in front of something. Everybody knows how, into the Instagram I am.
Yeah. I called it the Instagram. Yep. That's how you know it's big.
It's on the line. Yeah. You know what I've been doing? I've been liking my pictures of myself. That's what I've been doing. I thought I liked the whole post, but evidently no. It was a great picture of Coops, me, and one of our athletes, Tom. That's why I was liking it. But evidently not. I know. I've heard about it.
No, that's right. Did you hear it when you were listening to the podcast, or did someone snitch on us?
Yeah, right. I'm pleading the fifth.
Yeah, okay. I like what you've done with it. That's all right. No problems at all. Either way, welcome, bestie. I'll try and get a picture of you beforehand that we can post if that's a possibility. Speaking on the socials, X, Instagram, YouTube, just type in Talking Split. You'll be able to find the pages on there. Every Friday, there will be a podcast. Every Monday, there'll be a new drill that we throw up there as well. So if you are looking for something in particular to use at your training sessions, by all means, hit us up. We'll get some film on it. We did run out of film a couple of weeks ago. We filmed a whole bunch of stuff and then ran out of weeks, as it turns out. But we have filmed some more stuff since then, and it'll be going up every Monday to get us through to the end of the year. So if there is something in particular you're looking for, by all means, let us know. By the same token, if you do a great drill at your training sessions or whatever your program is, film it, send it in. We'll happily share it up there as well. Just some teaching points, things that you would use in there. The more we can share this stuff, the better. It is one of those things where coaches are phenomenal at sharing information. Like, it is one of the greatest things about being a coach in that world, is that you do have the opportunity to go and help other coaches out. It'd be fair to say we've probably never made up our own drills or offenses or anything like that in the world. We've always seen someone else do something or a modification of it that we've then changed and put our own slant on it. So the more we can share that sort of stuff, the better, for mine in particular. Reminder, we do have a mailbag segment coming up. That'll be in December. So anything that you want discussed on there, by all means, let us know. We do have a pod with Darren McInnes coming up as well, talking S&C for our youth athletes in particular, because I know that's a big part of what we're doing in the world, and we'll discuss that in a little bit as well. Coops, your SPP kids, or not even your SPP kids, your SDP kids and FDP kids down at Geelong tournament last week. Zoe spoke about it, how the girls went and the boys.
Yeah, really, really excited to pilot this, for the first time. Mainly FDP kids, some SDP kids. And we had a look at our athlete list. You know, it was really anyone who was roughly 2.5+ hours away and who wasn't playing VJBL. We thought, let's give them an opportunity to get together and play some meaningful games at the Geelong tournament. And overall, just absolutely fantastic. We were rapt at what we're able to get out of it. A little bit disappointing with some of the teams that we played. A couple of coaches pressed us all game and blew out some scores, which, yeah, it's just really, really disappointing that coaches, you know, feel like they need to do that, feel like they wanted to do that to a team that was considerably younger as we played our kids up an age group. So hopefully those sort of things get eradicated by their DOCs. But overall, just really, really pleasing. Special shout out to Jess Warner, who put her hand up to do the toughest gig in sports, team management. Shout out to Darcy Thornton, who took over for me, coaching the group.
Mate, we've got a button for this stuff.
You know you make me wanna shout, have my cold chairs, have my cold chairs, have my cold chairs.
Look, you're normally very good at this, Coops.
I know. Look, I'm really disappointed in myself. Yep. Sorry, everybody, that we didn't go straight to the button. I'll be better. But yeah.
Like, is this, should I be liking this?
Like this if you could. Yeah, right, yeah, like, double click.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out to Darcy Thornton. Who's done some really great stuff in our pathway, but in particular, you know, took this group of kids, you know, knew it was going to be a tough weekend from a results standpoint, and just really drove home, you know, our style of play, our culture, you know, just trying to get the kids better, enjoying the experience, which is awesome. But then another wonderful aspect of the event was we obviously had other SPP, SDP, MPP athletes there playing in with their actual VJBL teams. And I just wanted to shout out a few players in particular. So Keegan Johnson, Phil Wickham, Hugh Buckby, Levi Munyard, and Floyd Brooks all took turns throughout the weekend coming and sitting behind the bench or on the bench and watching, coaching, cheering, and mentoring these young players. And I just thought that was outstanding. And to hear that from other coaches that they were doing that, that nobody asked them to do that. They just really felt connected to these young players, wanted to be there for them. And so between, you know, team management, athletes, parent, coach, other program kids supporting, what an unbelievable demonstration of where the Country Vic, you know, culture is at this point. And I couldn't be more proud. So wonderful job to everyone involved.
You talk about that peer-to-peer mentoring a lot and coaching in particular, but money can't buy that. And like I know Zoe had Indy Schwartz come and sit on the bench, who's another one that's gone through numerous state teams. And having her sit on the bench and coach the other kids, hey, I've been here, this is what I saw, here's how I interpret it, to be able to pass that on to them, phenomenal. And huge by young athletes that may not be aware of the impact they actually have on the next group of athletes coming through. That in itself is phenomenal. So credit to those guys. Bestie, you're about to jump on a plane up to Canberra. Yep. You've got some stuff coming up. You want to talk us through that?
Yeah, sure. Both Jenna and I, we leave on Friday. We've got a few days camp before we tip off with the under 15 Oceanas. So the goal is for that group, which is the Crocs cohort, to qualify for Asia Cup the following year. Yep. So hopefully we get it done. I'm confident in the group and the coaching staff that we've got. So we had a good selection camp and we'll have a couple of days prep camp and then we'll roll into this thing and it'll be going. Yeah.
Unusual to have one in Australia. It kind of feels like, I think the only one I can kind of remember, maybe like 2012, 2014, there might have been a...
I think it's 2006.
Yeah, right.
Was the last one that we had. Yeah.
Okay. That was going back.
Yeah, so exciting to have any FIBA tournament, a home tournament. The arena up there has been redone, so our games will be there. That'll be nice. Yeah, just excited for it. Any green and gold stuff is awesome. And, you know, it's all been announced on socials, but there's, as normal, quite a few Vics up there in both the boys and girls teams. So, yeah, let's go get it done.
Yeah, and really cool to be a part of a lot of other kids' first green and gold experience too. Like, you get to kind of set a tone and an expectation is that, look, there's the hope that this is not the last as well. Like, you can only set yourself up and you can do what you do. As you say, it's limited prep time and all that sort of stuff, which we always know is the case when you go do green and gold stuff, but great opportunity by the same token. So congratulations. Look forward to seeing that. Games will be live streamed. They normally are, I think, for FIBA Oceania.
Yeah, I believe so. They'll be on the YouTube somewhere. Yep. Yeah,
FIBA Oceania YouTube, if you find it. Great. If not, we'll put it up on our socials. Make sure you like and subscribe, Bestie, and we'll get notified when it goes up there as well, just in case you're wondering. So one thing we are going to talk about today in particular. So one of the questions we do get, and I've got it a couple of times over the last couple of weeks, is what the focus should be for coaches when it comes to how they teach their kids. Because there's almost this impression where I can teach system and structure or I can teach skill sets and never shall the two cross paths. And for mine, I believe that's incorrect. But, you know, everyone will have their different sort of slants on this. Like, is it for you, Bestie, as black and white as that, and they're two separate entities, or is there a lot of blending for you?
It's 100% blending. I'm a games approach coach.
Yep.
I was thinking about this on the drive in today. It really all comes down to your coaching capacity. How many things can you be across? How many things can you coach at once?
Yep.
And I think that's where potentially some coaches get tripped up with this and maybe struggle with it. And also, what help do you have? You know, do you have assistant coaches? So we're lucky in our programs where we have awesome network coaches. You know, our SPP tonight, you know, we'll have Coops, myself, our SDC, Dave Peters, and then we'll have, you know, somewhere between 8 and 10 network coaches across 6 baskets.
Yep.
So we can do it. You know, and we put a plan in to do that. So I think that's probably the biggest factor is, what can you handle? Can you handle, if it's just you and your 10 kids, can you handle teaching skill and decision within system stuff? If you can't, then maybe you probably do need to do it in blocks.
Yep.
Like, what can you handle?
Yep. What about you, Coops?
Yeah, I love that point, because I was thinking about my days back in Ballarat and what we would do in terms of the breakup. And I would say to the coaches that, okay, Wednesday night, that's your system night. We're preparing for Friday night. Let's get the team stuff together. Let's get a feel for, you know, how we're going to operate as a unit. And then Sunday was all skill work. So at least that way, if we're talking about what Bestie is saying is, okay, maybe I'm new to coaching. Maybe I have that limited ability to be able to really blend the two together. I'm maybe at the infancy stage. That could be a possibility. Okay, I've got my two sessions a week. Maybe I start by breaking them up that way. One's a team session, one's a skill session. And then maybe you can slowly build that skill set.
Yep. Do you find when most people hear like systems and structures and those types of things, you find most people go straight to the offensive end with how they think about it?
Yeah, very much. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there's a sexiness to coaching offense, right? And there's, you know, a lot of, you know, social media and notoriety to coaches that are considered offensive geniuses and can do all the fun stuff with the whiteboard and so on. So naturally, a lot of coaches are gonna gravitate there. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, again, how do you come back to this blend? How do you understand that, you know, even the sexiest play, the best play, you still got to have players that have some sort of a skill set to, you know, to be able to, at minimum, put the ball in the hole. And we were lucky enough, we had a HP PD session online with Damian Cotter, who's currently the assistant coach with the Chicago Bulls, and it was on shooting. And one of the first things that he said, and poignant things that he said, is if you're working more on your offense than teaching players to put the ball in the hole, then, you know, your priorities are probably a little bit messed up, because, you know, without that skill set, you know, all the plays don't matter. So, yeah, you do naturally go there. You want to continue to find the balance, but you do have to have that priority checklist. You do have that understanding of reverse engineering some of this stuff so you don't get caught too heavily on either side.
Yeah, it's interesting, Bestie, because I mean, you have obviously come from a DOC role where you have a lot of structures and systems in place. Was that something that you created? Was that something that you've seen over years and thought, look, I like that, I don't love that part, let's see if we can blend this together? Like, how much information did you give the coaches in that, and how much did you sort of leave them to their own devices? Like, how did you find the balance of that?
Well, it came down to what I proposed to Casey when we spoke about me potentially coming on, where they wanted to go from, you know, really a growing association that exploded and really didn't have the things to go along with it. Like, their team numbers grew super quickly, and they had a lot of coaches that were very inexperienced. And you know, just through my observations, because I went and watched some stuff, I said to them, you know, this is good enough to get me interested, but bad enough to know I can make an immediate impact. And I think they were a little annoyed when I said that to them, but that was the reality. And because there were so many teams, we had to almost save some of those coaches from themselves. And you know, obviously, like, Dave continued that, and we'll see how you know, Paul goes now. But I think it was on that path. Did it? You know, we lost a couple of coaches because they wanted to do their own thing as well. And that was, you know, we said, no, this is what we're doing. So give and take with that. But, you know, I think going back to your question about the offense, what are all my sessions starts with, Coops? Like every one of them.
Yeah. Defense.
We're shell.
Like, yeah.
So at SPP is a little different. So so we have a 90-minute session Monday and Wednesdays, which is – it's really 85 minutes on the Monday, because I like to get off the court in time for the girls to get on, because they start at 8. And,
yep.
But on the Monday, we'll do 15-minute positional work, which is position. So guards, wings, posts. They do separate stuff. Sometimes there's a crossover, but, you know, most of it's separate. Then we'll do maybe the 40 minutes of, you know, like, playing some small sided stuff or even some 5-on-5, and then there's 25 minutes positional shooting at the end. You know, so that's how we do it. And then on the Wednesdays, the country boys come in. That's more of our compete session. So, but we still do a 10-minute indie positional and then 10 to 15 minutes of shooting at the end.
Yep.
You know, so I don't know, but we always start with a D because I think if you don't have that at a level, physicality, effort, communication, all of that, the offense isn't going to get any better anyway because they're only going to, they're just going to be playing against traffic cones.
Yeah, it's interesting to say because that's exactly what I was going to ask you. Like, would you rather put the defensive system in first if you were starting to walk into a new team that you've never coached before? Would you put the D in first?
Yep.
Yep. You would?
Yep.
Yep. Coops, same?
Yeah, Bestie actually kind of convinced me because I originally was offense and yep. that came from some of my other mentors that I had around, you know, laying some structure and, you know, so the like it kind of looked like basketball on the offensive end before you started adding the other stuff. But I'm a big believer in exactly what Bestie just spoke about in establishing the physicality, the communication, the intensity, all those sorts of things that you know you need to have a good session. And then, again, as I've got older, got more comfortable with the mess, I'm more happy to watch the offense just try and figure it out. Like, you can be some problem solvers for a little bit longer while we establish a really good defensive foundation. Then we can always go and add some of the O as we go.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't disagree with what you're saying because as I've got older, I've certainly leaned more heavily into the D. What I find myself, and it's exactly what you were talking about before, Coops, I find it really hard to be on the defense but then see something offensively and go, oh, I can just jump in and take that. There's nothing wrong with taking it as such, but keep on task is the hard part. And that's where I think, like, watching you guys at MPP camp a couple of weeks ago, every coach had a role. And it's like, hey, that's not your job. And it's not that you couldn't talk about it, but you would go and talk to the other coach about it and say, hey, this is your job. You need to be on top of this. And just making sure it's not so much staying in your lane, but stay on task is the big thing because we all do get enamored by the offense because that's what's fun. Hey, we'd rather score 95 points. It's like, actually, I'd rather keep them to 32. Like, it's that kind of thing. I would rather stay on the defense, but my head turns quickly, as it turns out.
It does, and this is why I said it's what's your capacity?
Yep.
You know, what help do you have? How experienced are you? Can you coach both sides? You know, how quickly can you get your points across in between each rep? You know, if it's just you, it's hard to hit two or three people on their closeout, blockout, whatever, and then the kid that didn't face the basket when they caught it on the offense as well. And it's in many ways, it's all level dependent as well. You know, we always come in here and talk about SPP, NPP, state teams, SDP, FDP, you know, national teams, Asia tours, whatever it is. There's a level already, you know, that these kids are in. So we can move along a little quicker with some of that stuff. But I just think, you know, seeing Shell drill and the offense is so comfortable, you know, it just, and then when they start playing, these kids can't do anything on offense because they've been practicing against garbage defense.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's why I say we hit it. But I think on the boys' side too, I shared a video with Coops before of a university practice in America, and it was, like, it was war. Like, there was one kid that got picked up and, like, tombstoned on his head. Literally. Right?
Yeah.
And this is, like, what conference are they in? I don't want to give the school away. What conference are they in?
Conference USA, are they still in that?
Are they? Yeah, that's right.
They used to be.
Yeah. A good school. Like, schools that have made the national tournament. And it's, like, you got to get it to that level before you can think about, you know, all the other stuff.
Yeah. Well, how do you – I'm just trying to – again, reverse engineer this. How do you know what a good cut looks like from a change of pace, change of tempo, when, where, how, if the defense is literally just standing there letting you cut across their face? Like, it's that kind of thing that it's the hardest thing I find to get right on the defensive end is that situational awareness to jump to the ball, be physical with it, know where the line is, but also get kids to understand that you're actually making your teammates better by doing this. And that's the bit that I find the biggest sell is just trying to, hey, you have to be this good defensively because that's the only way we'll get better offensively.
Well, we had this exact same problem on the weekend with our under 20 Navy camp. We are not putting in a 2-3 zone, right? We've got some other stuff. Now, having said that, if we need to, right? Yeah, yeah. Right?
But the carnival zone is still up the sleeve.
But we're not putting it in. We're not putting it in, but we are preparing to play against some of it.
Yep.
Right? That's just the reality. And it got to the point where I started coaching it. Because it's like, guys, you know, like anyone could score against this garbage. You know, my zone offense looked unbeatable. You know, like can't contain it. But so it's the same thing. If it's not at a level, the O's not going to get any good, and it wasn't.
Yep.
And we've got some practice games coming up. So, you know, we'll find out if someone drops into that. And I'm probably going to request that to see how we go.
Well, and part of that, so that's not necessarily a skill set thing, like on the defensive end. And this is why, like, I was kind of curious, the O or the D in particular. From a defensive thing, that's not really a skill set required. That's a basic functional movement requirement to be able to close out to the ball, jump to it, deny it, stunt in a lane. They're not things that necessarily require hand-eye coordination. That's just your ability to move around the court. So it actually makes more sense to start on the defensive end because you're just teaching kids how and when to move rather than think of all the things that can go wrong with ball handling, passing, shooting. Like it's infinite almost. Whereas on the defensive end, well, that's just functional. Like, can you walk down the street without tripping over? You know, some kids, no.
Do you want to walk down the street, Rob?
Well,
do you know, like that's the biggest thing. Yeah. It's like, do you care about this?
Mm. Yep.
And for us, it's like, you're on the sideline.
Yep.
or you're on the bench, and then very quickly, you're out.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is establishing your non-negotiables, establishing your, you know, what you care about. What are the things that that you identify with, or the things that identify your team and your program, and getting them done. You know, getting them done to begin with, and showing the players that this is what we stand for. And if you're not doing it, you're not going to play. You know, and there's, you know, I've got to that point recently where I've, you know, saying to players maybe two or three, you know, mistakes in a row, and especially if they're effort ones, where I'm just removing them from the floor. I'm like, if you're not going to do this, you don't get to play. If you're not going to communicate, you don't get to be on the floor. And then we just put them on the sideline and they can just stand there and watch, and we'll put other players on to establish the level that we're all talking about, because we want to get to that stage. And Bestie and I have spoken about this recently, where we've had some of those good sessions where, you know, all of a sudden you get the D to where it is, and now the O comes in and they're having to do what you're talking about, Rob, cut their ass off, set a great screen. All of a sudden they're scoring 3-4 times in a row. All right, defense, find a way. And it's this literal, like, one-upsmanship of just trying to get each other better as you go. But you can't do that without establishing the things you're talking about, effort, the communication, the, you know, the identity. I think partly in this too is understanding that we are all time poor, especially down here in Australia, where most of our coaches are operating on two practices a week, right? No matter what level they're at. And a lot of the time we do, unfortunately, fall into that trap of two-way teaching all the time. Mm. It's like, man, I've only got 90 minutes, or I've only got 60 minutes or whatever, so I'm going to coach the O and the D the whole way through this session. And there's some interesting work done by Doug Lamov, who talks a lot about that kind of singular focus in that, okay, if we are doing this 10-minute segment on, let's say, shell drill, and our focus is our off-ball positioning, the more I can keep my teaching to that one thing, it's going to help narrow the focus of the athletes and improve in that area, rather than giving them multiple different teaching points on different things, to the point where it's, what's that old adage, you know, throw up 5 tennis balls, you know, how many can you catch? So, and that's hard for coaches. I've found it hard coming up as a coach in being like, oh man, I'm seeing that's wrong. I don't want to address that. And then all of a sudden, all we're doing is confusing the athletes. So definitely a challenge to coaches to again, be a little bit more comfortable with the mess. Really hone in on the things that are important to you, and can you keep your focus there and keep the athletes focused there?
Well, and then celebrate the success. Yeah,
great call.
If you're continually, you know, looking at multiple things. When I first started, Mick Downer, he was a coach ed guy at BQ. Well, not when I first started, but when I first started getting serious in the coaching, he was a guy there, and we talked a lot about, you know, like one third skill, one third concept, one third gameplay. You know, I think, you know, a lot of people have used that as some sort of guide. I still think it does ring true. You know, if you're going by that, it's probably okay. You know, I think it's the, you know, it's the meat and potatoes of an okay plan. You know, it's like the deadlift and the bench press and the, you know, the squat. You know, you get them done, you're probably okay. So I think if you're struggling with that, like, you know, 60-minute practice, go 20 minutes of skill, you know, and if you can, if you got two hoops, try and do some positional stuff, I think is a, you know, and you got to think about how does it translate to what you want to do. I see a lot of coaches do shooting drills, and we do some of them as well, you know, but are those movements or are those types of shots even created in your offense, you know? So, you know, that's important. And then, you know, the concept stuff can be some, you know, small-sided stuff maybe even, but like the kids want to play, man. And the level that a lot of people are at, you want them to come back, you know. So play the games, you know, the kids want to play games, and I'm a games approach coach anyway, like, and it doesn't have to be that order either.
Yep.
You know, like you can change it around. You can, like I said, we'll do a skill component, and then we'll play a bit, and then we'll finish with the shooting. And you know, there's been times I've had to remind them, like, you know, we got six hoops here. It's just for you guys to come and shoot. You know, same as with our SDP kids, they get a whole session that's shooting. It's like, you know, you guys are lucky. Let's make the most of it. But I still think that one third, you know, is okay. It's a sound starting point, I think, yep, for the coaches that are unsure, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. It's when you work the skill stuff, would you say you would do more skill stuff on air, or would you do it with, say, defensive or a little bit of, say, guidance, I suppose, in that space?
Yeah. We, on a Monday night, our SPP, we do something similar in terms of trying to fold in some positional work and some shooting work, like our Metro friends. So we try and do a little bit of both. Yep. So give the guys an opportunity, some stuff on air, maybe they can be creative or they can just build a little bit of confidence through the repetition, and then we'll try and give them some sort of read or add some aspect of a physical defender, you know, something that makes it a little bit more gameplay. But we would, you know, that would be, again, roughly like a 10-minute block. So maybe five on air and then five competitive.
Yep.
But we would very, very rarely go a whole 10-minute block without a defender in some aspect.
Yeah, we're the same. I think it depends. So we've got positional development plans that we've created, and there's some things we're trying to focus on this block. So you might see more of one thing than another, you know. So at the moment, there's a focus on playing off two feet. So we're doing a lot of dribble handoff into one-on-one, you know. So we've been doing a bit of that. But there's always some on zero. The shooting blocks for us, not so much, because we're trying to just get some volume for them. But we do have some decision making in that. So it's not necessarily live play, but there might be, you know, one defender against two, or you're reading a closeout, hands up, hands down, whatever it might be. But, you know, it was 2 years ago, or no, probably 1 year ago, we had a Zoom about national shooting trends at nationals. And, you know, it's always a little bit skewed when you take the data of every team there. You know, as we know, there's some states that, you know, when you think about what's going to translate nationally, you probably should really only be looking at like the top five, top six teams, I think, for the data. Because if there's an athlete out of one of those lower teams, it's going to make it, their numbers are probably pretty good anyway. Or you can see through some of that, you know, that data, because they're having to do the bulk of the work.
Or free throw shooting percentages. That one is as old as time.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And it's usually lower than it should be.
Yeah, and I vividly remember Scott Butler he said, you know, what are you guys doing at Metro? Because we had led like back-to-back or three nationals in a row or something with multiple three-point shooters, you know, hovering around the 40 or above. And I told him, like, we have a whole session here once a week that's dedicated to it, and we just rep it out. And a lot of those kids have said how comfortable they feel shooting the ball because of that. So that's why that stuff on air I don't mind, but you've also got to coach the tempo, and you know, like, better is better, more is not better. Yep. So if you were to come and watch our 25 minute shooting block on the Monday, those kids are moving, you know, the ball's going everywhere, like they are getting shots up a lot. We've had to have some coaches come in to do some passing, and I had one coach need ice. That's a real.
It wasn't sport. Me before anyone asks.
No, that's what, you know, and these coaches are like sweating because they're past it. It's like next. So if you're going to do that, you know, it's got to lots of reps, lots of game shots.
Yep. So how much feedback would you be giving to players while you're doing that then?
In that block?
Yeah.
None.
Yeah,
none, okay. None. It's reps, but...
ball goes in, must be good. Ball misses, must be bad.
Not necessarily. Like, yep. No, but we've got rebounding rules, first of all. So if the ball bounces twice, you got a burpee. But...
it's rough on the coaches.
Yeah. Yeah. But the first thing is, we speak about what the emphasis is for the block in their positional plans, and then they all should be having some points of emphasis for themselves through that block on what they're focusing on. And then we might talk to them about, all right, so I don't know, maybe it's like bust down three. So we'll talk about, right, you know, this footwork is what we're sort of focusing on, if that makes sense, yeah.
Yep.
It's a perfect segue into, I think, what that the misconception can be around the skill development stuff, which is where you're going to have your 10 athletes or whatever doing stationary on-air ball handling. You know, of course, no one has the time to do that. You know, that's not what we're talking about here. And the accountability piece for each athlete really needs to happen at every level. And that great book by Dr. Angela Duckworth in called Grit.
Awesome book.
Yeah. And there's this section that talks about purposeful practice. And that the best people in the world in whatever endeavor, it's all about purposeful practice. It's plan. It's purposeful practice. It's evaluate. And it's repeat. And so one of the things that we talk about a lot, especially with our FDP, but more so our SDP coaches, is that if you're in some sort of games approach, small-sided game, or even just some sort of decision or defense-led one-on-one or one-on-two skill situation, and a player can't execute the ball handling move or the pass or the particular finish, that should go in their journal. That should be taken and to create a plan. So, okay, between Monday night and the next Monday, so I struggled to make, you know, my hook, wide hook finish off the high glass. Okay, well, I know between this Monday and the next Monday, I've got to get, you know, 500 or whatever it may be, and then I'm going to work on that skill that's going to improve me rather than having to budget, you know, further time in a mass player environment for that minimized type skill work.
I've had this debate with many coaches when we talk about our curriculum, right? So let's use FDP as an example. So our FDP kids are under 14s, top and bottom age. Metro, Country and Metro have similar number of total hours. Ours is a bit more consistent, but we only do 1 hour a morning, whereas Country have some camps and stuff, right? But our Metro kids do 1 hour for 5 weeks a block, right? So we get them for 5 hours in a term. And that was by design. You know, they're young. They're doing other things. We don't want to burn them out. We wanted to introduce them to the mornings because that's what SDP is going to be. And it was also just enough to hopefully, you know, let these parents think, oh, you know, I probably shouldn't sign them up to do that extra thing. You know, like it was just, you know, there was a bit of thinking through that, right? So then it comes down to, all right, so we've got 60 minutes. What are we going to budget our time on? And, you know, I've had great debates with people about this when I might put 10 minutes or 15 minutes of that 60 minutes in some receiver work. And I was like, I might not be able to improve your left-hand finishing, but I can improve your understanding of where to stand, when to cut, how to move in relationship to the ball and your other players. And, you know, the counter-argument is, well, we need to spend time on their left-hand finishing, for example. Great. All right, let's do that. How much time do you want to budget out of our 60 minutes for that? Great. 10 minutes. Awesome. So what we're saying is 10 minutes a week we're going to spend on – are they going to get any better? They're not getting any better on that. Now, what our job is in that 10 minutes or through that practice is to inspire them to go and work on that in their own time. Like, and that, because those that either you can do it or you need to work on doing it. If you need to work on doing it, 10 minutes, you know, times five sessions, so 50 minutes in a term, like they're not getting better at it. I'm sorry. They're just not getting better at it. So our job's more to show them the skills they need and then help them with a plan. Now, if you were in a daily practice environment, you're with them every day, as we were in college, Coops, and what they have at the COE. And even here, our SPP, MPP kids, we get them twice a week. You know, that's it. You have to be conscious of what you're budgeting your time on. And then the next part is you got to inspire them to – the other stuff's important. This is how you need to go and work on it. Because those that do are the ones that have a chance. Those that think they can just rock up and pull their shoes out of their bag once a week or whatever it is, you know, unless you're 7 foot.
Well, they'll get fed out eventually. Like eventually someone's going to be working harder than you at what you're doing and is going to overtake you. And, you know, we've spoken about the early maturation in particular in kids. The ones that look like adults in under 14s that never actually improve because they don't work on their skill set. All they do is they're just physically more dominant. And so we look at things like the biobanding, which again, we've spoken about a little bit on this already. And it's like, well, budget your time into skill set then. And my thing is, I suppose, if we're looking to our coaches, your job is to guide the players down that path in that, yeah, you're doing a 60-minute session here, but so is everyone else. So what else are you doing to actually separate you from the other kids? So if a kid can't make their wide layup, okay, go and write it down, but then go and find out how you can make it. Like, is it as simple as, I just need more reps at it, maybe. You know, are you jumping off the wrong foot? Are you aiming at the wrong spot? You know, there might be some other intricacies in that. Some of the best finishes in the world are ones that have, like, broken a hand or something like that and ended up in a plaster cast and had to find different ways to finish off the backboard using some spin on that, going underhand and all that sort of stuff because they had to adapt. So I think there's a big part of this as well where we have to send our kids on that path and it's like, well, look, here's what we're going to need from you. Here's some parameters we can give you at our training sessions, but ultimately it'll be on where you want to go with this. If you want to go and do more work, well, you're going to see more results at some stage. What they can't probably replicate in their own time is the additional defender, the additional decision-making, those sorts of things. So when you talk about receivers principles, for example, that's one that we can absolutely do at practice and should do at practice because you can't tell me, one, we're not repping a left-hand finish at the same time. Like we can get that in to our receiver spots principles, but it's also something they can't do in their own time unless they've got a couple of friends that they're that are pretty happy to go and see even dunk a spot for them, but there's not too many people that are willingly going to go and wheel out when they get dribbled at or anything like that. So we do have to be a little bit careful as to what the message is, I suppose, that we send with them. It's not the skill development is not important because it is important, but it is partly your responsibility as a player to go and seek that out.
100%. And when you're saying that, it comes back to the why.
Yep.
You know, are you doing two sessions of macro system-based stuff because you're trying to win VC or you're trying to win VJBL Division 2 and you've got this, you know, me focus, win focus, don't really care what happens to the athletes once they're out of your team? Or do you have a long lens, an LTAT approach that says, okay, yes, I need to do some things now that's going to help this thing look like basketball and we're going to be competitive on a Friday night, but your ultimate job is to get those players to the next level.
Yep.
And that might just be, you know, the bottom age team for the next year. But the VJBL coaches, like, you've got to ask your players, like, what do they want to do? They're all going to tell you they want to play in the NBA or the NBL or play for Australia. Your job is to help them achieve that. It's not to win a VJBL banner.
Yep.
They're pointless. Well, it's about the athletes.
So this will sort of come back full circle-ish. So stick with me. This may take a while. Or it might be really short and succinct depending on how this goes. Do we end up having this conversation purely based on our calendar where we go down the path of structure because we pick our teams and we have to win straight away during grading? Then potentially we have a second phase of grading where we have to try and win straight away. Then we have our first half of the season where we've got to win enough games to potentially qualify for the better tournaments or the top half of our comp. Like, is that a part of why we feel like structure is more valuable than skill set?
Yeah. Like for us, when at Ballarat, we would sit down as part of our – we had a two or three planning meetings with the coaches before we started the season, and one of them was our periodization planning meeting. And I had a periodization schedule. They said, okay, your small pre-grading and your grading phases, great. Press, zone, if you have to, like, figure out the best things for the strength of your teams to get you to the highest level possible that's going to challenge these athletes and get them the best value for money on a Friday night. I was all for it. I was like, go for it. Put in whatever you need to get to that point. Once they qualified, they had to come right back to the start. And the first, I think it was either 6 to 8 weeks of EJBL, was like preseason. They had to go right back to laying the foundations of skill development, small-sided games. It was all concepts. There was no structure. And once they'd made their grade, I couldn't have cared less whether they made something ridiculous like the classic or finals or anything like that. I could
nice to have. But
yeah, sure, cool. Great. Yeah. If you make it, bonus, great. High fives, awesome. But it was about the kids. It was like, okay, great, you made VC, awesome. You've done your job. Now go get those kids better and use the VJBL and use this calendar. You're in 8 weeks of preseason. Okay, preseason's over. Now how do we scaffold on top of that and getting the kids better and better and better? And at the end of the day, the byproduct of those things are winning games anyway. So
I really like it. Bestie?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think, you know, anytime a club wins a title, it's nice for the club and, you know, it's all of it's good. Yeah. Right.
No one's disappointed by it.
Yeah, like yeah. It's good.
Yep.
But going back to your comment around the calendar, I don't necessarily think so. Like, I know I've been one in the past to talk about, you know, is it too many games? Is it too long? I think for volunteer coaches and managers, it's too long.
Mm. Yep.
But it goes back to you only get these kids twice a week. So if the calendar was exactly the same and the only basketball these kids did was rep basketball, but they practiced four days a week, you know, because these kids are doing four practices a week anyway.
Yeah,
you know,
just not normally with the same coach.
That's
like normally four different coaches.
And that's the issue, right? Yeah. So they're doing their couple with their rep coach, then they've like probably got a school thing, and then they've got, you know, if they're in our programs, you know, they're generally, you know, they're pretty good, obviously, because they're in our program. And you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, we go by year born in our programs. It's not just under 18. So we'll you know, for example, this year we've got an 08 cohort and an 09 cohort. So clearly some of the 08s that didn't make our program might be better than some of the 09s, but that are in our program. But we've got a balance of our programs, and we know those younger kids will improve. And you know, it's probably another discussion. But I think it's probably more of a setup problem, if I'm being honest, because we all remember, I think it was pre-COVID when that was it Lithuania or whatever, that under 14 team that came out, and you know they had, you know, they did really well until they ran into a zone press, and it was like, well, we don't work on this, you know, what is this sort of thing, and give me one practice and I'll fix it type thing. But he was very adamant. Yeah. He was like, you know, we coach these kids 4 days a week. And it was the same when I went to Schweitzer. So we had an amazing rock lookalike. His name, have you seen that photo?
That photo's amazing.
Right. Anyway, his name was Mert, and he was our like liaison for the tournament, right? And he coached the Mannheim U16 National League team, right? So obviously Germany, geography, you know, the country's smaller, more population, but geographically smaller. And so they have a national league for that age, right? And that's who they got. You know, he they're with him 4 days a week, play two games, 4 days a week. And I asked him, what do you do? And he's like, well, you know, we really only do one session on offense, like as in team offense, like, and very similar to that other team that came out.
Yep.
And what would be very similar to European academies. And this is part of the issue. So I don't think the calendar's the issue. I think it's too many different voices, too many different, you know, and it's not, you know, everyone is going to have their, well, my thing's more important. You know, there's always going to be that. And I'm sympathetic to that. I go back to the whole reason we created SPP was to have the better players playing against each other and practicing with each other with high-level coaches. Now, some clubs can achieve that, right? You go and look. You go and look at. Sure. You go and look at a another Whiting that had five boys in the state team plus two reserves. Like their practices would be pretty good, I would think. Right? Yeah. But the reality is, 99% of them don't get that, right? So that's why when we come together, we work on some of that competitive stuff, some of that, you know, maybe a little bit more system stuff, because they're playing against similarly skilled and talented and most of all competitive hungry athletes that they have. Whereas at a rep, at a club or a school level, we know it's hit and miss. You can have some really good kids, but then you can have some really, you know, not bad kids, but not great basketballers or people that don't even really want to be basketballers. They just like playing for now in their period of life. So, you know, if we were to go and change the whole, blow up the whole thing, you know, you would have...
It's about an eight-part podcast. Well, like, that's not a quick one.
Yeah, I know, but I still think you go to what USA is doing right now. Like they've got their club season and they've got their, you know, which is highly unregulated and out of control. We get that. But then they got their school season. You know, whereas right now it's all at once and it's so everyone feels they've got to put their team stuff in, you know, and then these kids are confused and because we're no different.
Yep.
You know, and then even the same with the shooting. Oh well, my coach has told me to do this. And it's like, well, all right, well I'm telling you to do, you know.
Yep. And you just got a confused athlete that's paralyzed by I'm not too sure which message to listen to. It's like, you know, you can't chase two rabbits. Like, you go hungry. Like, pick one and lean into that sort of thing. And
yeah.
Like we were talking about the other day, Coops, that Borussia Dortmund video that came through.
Yeah.
They play against Bayer Leverkusen. I can't think of the other town. But again, geographically they can. But they have a bio-banded competition. So they have their normal competition that would run with their age groups.
Great.
But then they're bio-banded out into, well, actually, physically, this kid's an under-16 kid, not an under-12 kid, or what is normally the case, this kid is, their age is in under-18s, but physically they're still an under-14 athlete. They may not have gone through puberty yet. So they'll play all those kids against each other. That's like, phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like that is brilliant use of the resources you have, keeping everyone on the same page with, hey, we're teaching all the same stuff, but you're in a position when you can actually succeed because your physical ability is not what holds you back, and that starts to teach the mental sides of the game.
For me, I can't see reasons or strong enough reasons that can't be done at club level.
Yep.
That you could drop a team practice to create a bio-banded session that's going to help the athletes in those more competitive and potentially, you know, high challenge, high support environments. Again, you know, I draw back on my experience, you know, out in the RAT. Like we did that on Wednesday mornings. We had our CBL athletes, our youth league athletes, our under 18s, our 16s together. Like, so we took our better under 16s and put them in that environment, you know, to let them feel and see what it was like. And that was a more heavily skill and shooting based session. You know, just to try to push them and try different ways of, you know, of exploring best practice and challenging the athletes to get better. More innovation, more thought process around, you know, how are we best serving these athletes, not trying to win VJBL games, is going to get, you know, get the needle moving in the right direction.
Well, we do it. You know, we've been doing it. And I understand that we're not preparing for anything right now.
Yep.
You know, we're a development program.
Yep.
So we grab that kid and put him on this basket. We move some kids down. We've done that as well. And it's not always, you know, that kid's not quite up to it. So he's on the young court all the time either. It's like, well, he needs to go through that period where he's getting his ass whooped. And then, you know, then we're going to move him here so he can have some success as well. Like, we're very mindful of that and mindful of what we're talking about, that we're not right now competing for anything. So we can afford to do that. And I think, you know, I had an athlete come to me on Monday and say, how do I phrase this? And say, I've been asked to do NBL 1. I was like, oh. So this is an 09 athlete, so bottom age 18s. And I was like, oh, okay. I said, oh, yeah, they think it's going to be really good for my development. And I said, well, okay, so what are you dropping? Are you going to drop one of your under 18 practices? Oh, well, I hadn't really thought of that, right? And I'm aware I'm talking to a 15-year-old kid.
Yep.
And I just said, well, you can't just keep adding on, right? And sure, it is, you know, it's okay to go against some men at a certain time. And look, he's pretty good. Don't get me wrong. He's pretty good. He wouldn't be in our program if he wasn't. And there is some value to that. But at what time, you know, is important? You know, he's in the thick of it with our under 18 state trials. You know, he's going to be, you know, going to East Coast. So we've got some prep sessions for that. And it's like, you know, and this is where I come back to the setup, you know, because it's that club is like, yeah, this is one of our better juniors, you know, and let's not forget the fact that, you know, you're going to be a number until all my players arrive. Like, you know, that's
usually how it works.
Yeah, yeah. We've all been there. Like, you know, I've coached youth league last couple of years. We pulled up some 18s and said the same stuff. The difference is they would then drop an under 18s practice, right? So like Coops is saying, and like we're all saying, yeah, it'd be great to have four practices a week. And but we can't change all that because what other thing is going to be given away? And that's like when Coop said, if you want to buy a band some kids, great. That has to be a program decision. It's not an add-on, do another,
right?
Do another thing. The reality is, and we all agree on this, if you're a coach and you've got kids that are doing rep, school, our program, you know, the next thing they need to be doing is SNC. Like, there's no more basketball they need to be doing. Like, in fact, they probably need to, you know,
sacrifice a few of those for SNC.
Yeah, in some of those heavy periods, you know, there's a reason we changed our program so only 6 weeks a block. You know, the MPP kids for blocks 2, 3, and 4 get 8. But, you know, there are a lot of other academies that will run, you know, the full 10 weeks a term, whatever. And there's some money stuff involved with that. We get that. They're businesses. But if you want to do some extra stuff as a network coach, as a domestic or a rep coach, and you've got kids that are in our program, just I implore you to reach out to us to find out the program dates and look to do it in the weeks that we're not on. So then you're just not burning them out, and because there's a reason we have those time off. So we'd say to them, you know, this is where you're at the end of the block. Let's see what you can improve.
Yep.
Outside of that,
the S&C stuff is vital. Like, and I think it gets thrown around really flippantly. Like, oh, you know, you got to get stronger and then left to your own devices. Like, it's, oddly enough, we were just talking about it before you guys jumped in the room. It's like, yeah, well, it's all well and good to say you need to do S&C and you need to talk about their nutrition, but they can't put on any size if they're just burning it off by doing so many more sessions during the week. Like, it's counterintuitive to what's supposed to be going on. And there are some school programs out there that do a really good job of this, to be completely fair, where they'll say, hey, you can be a part of your basketball program, but you're not on court. Like, your basketball program is in the gym. Go in there now, get it done now, do your rehab, your prehab, your lift, whatever you need to do. That's the area for mine that is the missing piece with a lot of our kids, because they can do more if they're better structurally built, but they never get the opportunity to structurally build because they're always... And let's say a 90-minute session is not a 90-minute session. A 90-minute session turns into probably 2.5 hours.
Correct.
By the time they drive in, get all, depending on where they're coming from, like for some of your kids, Coops, potentially 5 hours.
Yeah.
By the time they're in and out, by the time they wind down after a session, they are mentally on for a long time before and after it, because we're also coaches that, don't come into this practice until you're switched on. So they get mentally prepared beforehand. We have to be careful as to how much we're putting our kids through. Like, an off day is not always an off day. Like, it's not going to be a real training, so just come in and shoot. Well, probably have to still tape or brace. They still put load in. Like, it's not an off day.
There's kids right now that are playing a 5 or 5:30 p.m. Friday night school game and then going straight to their VJBL game.
Yep.
You know, like, no time in between, Maccas or something, you know, like, whatever it might. It's real.
Yep.
But yeah, the strength and conditioning thing is, you know, it's something that really jarred me when I went to America. You know, like, anybody that saw me before, I didn't lift. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't lift. That was the reality of it, right? And I get over there and, you know, depending on the level of the school you go to, again, you know, like, we had a big dude that was our strength coach. Looking back at it, I don't know what qualifications he had, but he was our strength coach. Like, I'm sure he had, He had something.
With more heavy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's, you know, we did a testing day and it was your one rep max and then your workout was decided off your max, right? And there were some things where I couldn't do what was the minimum for the max. So he would just write that down. So then my workout was based, you know, 85% of this thing that I couldn't even do, right? So, and then I'm getting yelled at because I couldn't make a bucket and I couldn't fill my arms. But it's not traumatic. But what I'm saying is, we've also got some kids that are paying strength providers, and we've had one, you know, and we've just recently done some testing, and we've got some kids that have gone through two or three sessions a week for, you know, a year or more with certain strength trainers, and like that their max push up was 5 or 6. But max. Couldn't do it.
Just crazy.
It's like, what
have you been doing?
What are you doing? Yeah. It's just like, hey man, just pay ID me this money, you know? So there's a bit of that. And then it's the food thing, you know, speaking to, you know, one of our colleagues in another program, they've started a breakfast club where a coach goes and eats with them for breakfast. Cause a lot of these kids were you know, choosing the easy option of an up and go or a banana or whatever it is, like Iowa State.
Gee, that's far healthier than where I thought you were going. I thought you were going to a bacon and egg McMuffin.
Yeah. But those things are available.
Yeah.
But it's some of these kids are tired and they'd rather just prioritize some sleep. And then I look back, it's like Thursday morning, you know, most mornings I get up and I'll have, you know, my oats and yogurt and a banana or whatever it might be, right? But those mornings where I'm getting up, I'm going to FDP, it's like, oh, I'll just grab one of these oat bars and like that'll do, you know, because. And apparently Iowa State, this is all third-hand information, so take from it what you will, but apparently they started this breakfast club, so there's a coach there with them, and he's, you know, it's not, they're not, you know, weighing your plate and all that, but it's this mindset of like, let's get in there and eat. And then there's a coach there with them for lunch, and then they have dinner at like 4:30 or 5 p.m. before study hall, right? So they know for a fact that they're there with them for like 3 meals, right? And then, you know, they've got a full belly, they go into study hall, they can get all that done. But the interesting bit is the genius behind it, and you recall this, Coops, you are so hungry at like 8 or 9. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? You are so hungry. Yeah. And the text goes around like...
I'm disappointed you've excluded me from that one, Bessie, because I'm usually rather hungry at 8 or 9, and Uber Eats send me notifications saying, you haven't ordered anything tonight. What's going on?
Well, sorry. I was more talking about in a college sense, right? Yeah. But then the texts go around. The texts go around because not everyone on campus has got a car. Yep. And it's like, hey, who's going to... whatever it is, Burger King, Mickey D's, whatever, dollar menu, like this is what's happening. So by doing that, they've created, you know, that fourth meal might not be as nutritionally excellent as the other meals, but now they're eating four meals, you know, whereas like a lot of these kids, I ask them in camp, like, you know, we had under 20 camp and we had an hour break for lunch and it was a Dandenong. So the coaches, we just ducked up to the Subway. And we're like, we wanted to get out of the stadium, you know, just get away from the kids a little bit, let the kids, you know, bond and, you know, probably complain about us, whatever. And I come back and I just kind of like, what'd you have? Just asking them. And like, these under 20 kids. And we had some of like, oh, I had an up and go and a granola bar. And I'm like, mate, you know, another kid said, oh, well, I had like a few potato cakes and whatever from the canteen. And like, I feel like I'm going to vomit now.
Respect.
You know, but it's real.
Yeah.
It's real.
It is accurate. It's funny. Like when we used to go up to East Coast, and you'd have like East Coast, for those that may not be aware of it, January tournament, usually cooking in Sydney weather. Like, but it's one of those things. Always hot, always humid when you go up there. Mm. The amount of times kids would walk off courts with cramps and those sorts of things, and they'd just be like, well, what did you eat? I didn't have breakfast this morning, or I just grabbed some chips in between games. It's like, well, what do you expect? Like, this is a byproduct of your own inability to do the right thing here. And you know, what is the education we provide around that? Like those SDP, SPP, NPP kids do get some education nutrition and to what it needs to look like. But what is the process that a player goes through before playing a game? What's it look like after their game has ended? Because a lot of kids will probably finish their game at 11 p.m. What are you really getting? Because you should be eating or drinking something nutritious within half an hour of finishing that game. Yeah. What are you getting that's not Macca's drive-through? But that sort of stuff we have to take into account as well, because their kids aren't. Mm. So if we can provide more education around that, I think that that matters a lot more. Well, nothing to do with structure or skill set, which I thought we were talking about. But it's quite okay, though.
We are physically inferior compared to our...
for sure it is.
Like our...
Yep.
Our competition in other countries, and you've seen it. Yeah. I saw it at Swatta. We won it. We were better players, but there were some, man, these kids were jacked.
Yeah,
you know, like huge, and eating more than us in the meal tent because we'd all go in there together.
Yep.
And you know, like we talk about skill, like eating a correct diet and a protein dense diet. It's hard. You know, it's you know really
boring.
Yeah, but what's the word? What's the word that fills you up quickly?
Hardy?
Dense?
Yeah, maybe. Whatever. But you can't. It's really hard. And that you see some of these kids coming, they're used to eating like that.
Mm. Yeah.
Ours, you know, we're good on the celery and the carrots and all of that stuff. And it's important. It is important, but
yeah.
We're not eating enough protein.
No, I agree with that completely. Like it is something that our kids have to be conscious of as their workload spikes. In particular, this time of year where more and more people want a piece of them, we have to be really careful about what we're putting into our training sessions that will set them up for success off the court as well.
Well, we had our nutritionist come and talk to the SDP kids at intro camp, and she started off with just some survey stuff. I was like, okay, so who's been injured this year? Hands go up, pretty much all of them, right? Who's been sick this year? Hands go up. Pretty much all of them. Who's been sick more than once? Mate, I swear, like there was more than 60% of kids left their hands up. And it's like, now I know they're in these environments at school, you know, it's like the Patriotist type thing. But diet plays a big part in that. It just does.
I think too, the, you know, like coming back to the original question, like it's really these priorities, right? And then prioritizing the things that are going to maximize the athlete's chance of success or getting to the next level. They need the blend of skill development. They need the blend of concepts and gameplay. They need the blend of strength and conditioning. They need the blend of nutrition. And the environment that they're in, especially something like a VJBL, where that's their main team, us as coaches have to take responsibility for that. You know, in terms of, now we're not saying you're going to make diet plans and things like that. Of course not. Like we're not talking about being irresponsible, but we're talking about understanding the load that these athletes are under and all the little things that, like, especially our friends around the world are getting access to that our athletes aren't getting access to. We got to help them build those habits. Because the other one for me is film. As we know, film is the best teacher. And a lot of the athletes that we are dealing with are only ever getting auditory instruction, which means that they're just getting their coach saying to them, whatever it might, hey, you know, your footwork was incorrect, you need to do it like this. And that might be it. It might be just one verbal instruction. And let's say maybe they get 7 verbal instructions throughout a session. If they're not great with verbal instruction, you know, the research shows that athletes learn better not by being one particular way of learning, but all, like a combination of at least 3 or more is the best way to do it. And so being able to watch film and actually sit down with them or show them, send them a clip and say, hey, remember we were talking about that footwork on your jump shot or your layup, whatever? This is what it looks like when you did it poorly. This is what it looks like when you did it well. There is so many things that we need to impact across the board to help our kids be successful, because they all want to play for Australia. They want to play in the NBA. And it's happening quicker and quicker and quicker. Bestie's about to go, you know, for, you know, this first green and gold experience under 15. And you need elite habits and you need an elite skill set and you need an elite understanding of the game and you need to be able to watch film and process it. You need to be able to lift weights and eat properly. So there is this real blend that is really, really hard for us to do down here because of the split focus with school and multiple coaches and multiple activities and all these sorts of things. So we've got to really try and take on more responsibility to help these athletes build a better blend of all of the things that are important.
And you're on the money, because like the film stuff in particular, I know there was one of the girls in Zoe's program was really struggling with the structure and the system. like just it was a little bit foreign to her. She hadn't been around that environment before, so it was just a lot for her to take in straight away. It's like, no worries, mate. We'll film it. We'll send it to you. Like, since seeing it, no issues whatsoever. Knows it like the back of her hand. She goes, oh, yeah, I get this now. But wasn't understanding it when she was practically on court. It's going to happen with more and more of our kids. Our kids are more and more diverse with how they understand things now than they ever have been before. Like 25 years ago, every kid got coached exactly the same way. Mm. And if you didn't suit that way, well, you probably weren't making it. Whereas now we cater a lot to different learning styles and how our kids understand the sport and the game and everything else in between. We have to be cognizant of that, and which is why it's a bit of a ridiculous question, like structure or skill set. Of course it's both.
Mm.
Like, yeah, it has to be both.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
it, there's no possible way where it can be just one or just the other.
Right.
It has to be both. Yeah. Now, I would have a personal opinion that your skill set will help your structure before your structure will help your skill set, but it's not an absolute either. Like, if you know where your shots are coming from, where you can start to work on your skill set towards getting better in that position as well. So there's a lot that goes into it, but I would recommend to coaches really have a genuine think, like the planning side of things and the periodization, have a genuine think about what you want your next 12 months to look like. And then probably reverse engineer it from there. And it's like, well, when do we need our areas of focus? This time of year, it might just be like haphazardly throwing darts at a dartboard and just whatever sticks, great. If that gets you a win on a Friday night that gets you up a grade, well, cool. Like that might be what you have to sacrifice.
But asking your athletes where they want to be in 12 months' time and start putting some things in place that's going to help them get there.
Yep, absolutely.
Call their other coaches.
Mm.
Yep. What's your mobile number again, Bestie? Well, I can just get you on Instagram.
Can you message on that?
I believe so.
Really?
Yeah, I believe so.
Wow. 2024.
What an era we live in.
Let's go. It's like me on Twitter.
One of the things I did hear during the week as Coop's head butts the door in a fit of rage, just finding out you can now message on Instagram, was a soundbite from Roy Hodgson. So Roy Hodgson's a very famous football coach from over in England recently. I want to say Crystal Palace, off the top of my head, manager, had this one for us.
The advice to the grassroots ones is very simple. You know, make certain that every kid at your training session finds some enjoyment from it and doesn't want to give the game of football up because of what you've done as a coach. Don't start trying to coach the 12, 13 and 14-year-olds as if you're preparing for a Manchester United Champions League game in a week's time.
Now, one, Manchester United will not be playing in the Champions League game in a week's time. Different issue. However, there's a lot in that. And when we start talking blended delivery in particular, you listen to that sort of thing, and it's amazing how many coaches have this light bulb moment the further they get away from the beginning of their coaching career, that our job is to make sure our kids enjoy it and walk out happy as they go through it. Now, will they have experienced success on every single possession of that game? No, that doesn't mean that we blow their tyres up just for the sake of blowing their tyres up, but it does mean that we have to be really cognizant of the content we put into our training sessions to make sure that they're happy and they're enjoying it. Kids that enjoy it will go and do more. They'll stay in the sport longer, they'll be happier, they'll improve, they'll experience success, they become better people. And yes, does every player want to play NBA, WNBA? Probably. Is that realistic? Probably not for the vast majority of them, but can they be good, high-functioning members of society? Absolutely. And that's where sport comes into it. So for mine, that's just a great message to leave on for everyone else. Thank you guys very much. Good luck, Bestie. By the time this drops, you'll actually be in tournament mode. So I'm going to assume you'll be playing off for a gold medal.
Yeah, don't try and message me on Instagram. I'll be, you know, busy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go Crocs.
Yeah, Snapchat only.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.